shack. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock like a
radio show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in, and we're glad to be back with you. Got an awesome show in store for you tonight. A few special guests in the studio. We got Manny Aguilar. What's up, man?
What's up, Nick? How you doing, man?
Pretty good.
I'm here. Glad to have met Claire in person, obviously. Very good. And then, of course, I was out there in the protests, you know, about this man that got killed by Border Patrol. But what else is new? You know, Department of Justice says there's no evidence. There's so much evidence, and I don't understand. Maybe they got threw it away or something, you know. So it's good to be here in San Diego for 3 days. It rained today and all that, but it's all right. And enjoying being here with Claire and Nick, also known as Nicolas Barnabas in Espanol.
So we also have Claire Burnish in the studio. How's it going?
All right, you did it. It's going great.
I finally got your last name right.
You got it right.
Like, how many ones? We're also joined tonight by, I believe we have both DB Schwartz and Jake Anderson together in the...
Yeah, at the risk of sounding lascivious, DB and I are currently sharing a motel room together. Yeah, we're eating a chocolate bar that's probably killing us, but yeah, we're here, man. Glad to be with you guys.
I'm assuming there's a bubble bath or something involved there, right?
It's a jacuzzi tub. I just didn't bring Mr. Bubbles.
We're not in it yet, but just don't put anything past us at this point.
DB, ¿qué pasa? ¿Cómo estás? Hey, Jake, ¿cómo estás?
¿Cómo está, buddy?
Muy trepido.
Hopefully you guys are enjoying some good beers like we are. Manny surprised us with a 12-pack, and we're enjoying those while on air. We're not going to talk about brands or anything.
And we're actually having eggnog.
Oh man, okay. So anyway, it was a really crazy weekend for news. We were actually, several things happened on Saturday. We were supposed to go to LA and go to a protest at the Saudi embassy against the war. We didn't end up making it for several reasons. One of them was that there's just so much news going on as well, and just so many, you know, crazy stories that came out this weekend that we just couldn't, like, really leave the computers. And it's kind of sad to look at it that way. But, you know, we're trying to do a service here and make sure everyone gets the news that needs to be read out there on the antimedia.org. So that's kind of what me and Claire did for the most part over the weekend, is just, you know, working pretty much around the clock trying to get these stories out there. The first one, which I believe we put out on Friday was regarding this 6-year-old boy that was, I mean, a 6-year-old kid gunned down by the cops.
Autistic.
A 6-year-old autistic boy, right? And this is just, you know, the story broke several days prior. I think on Wednesday the story broke. And, you know, it was just one of those things where it's like, oh, shit, this is a horrible story. I can't believe this is going on. How is a 6-year-old going to get gunned down by the cops? Friday comes out that they arrest the cop, you know, because... they arrest two of the cops because they looked at the body camera footage and they're like, oh, damn, they murdered this kid. You know, and they're also being charged with attempted murder of the driver, which I presume is the kid's dad. And so, you know, Claire wrote a story on it, got a lot of attention. The story, thankfully, went viral. And it's one of these kind of inexcusable police brutality stories, you know, and people, cop apologists everywhere, love to make excuses for the cops. You know, the most recent case where the cops slammed the 16-year-old girl in South Carolina, everyone's like, oh, well, it's her parents' fault, and, well, she should have been following the rules and all that. I don't give a shit what they're saying. There's no excuse to slam a 16-year-old. But this story here, shooting a 6-year-old autistic boy 5 times, there's absolutely no way to excuse this. Claire, what can you tell us about this story?
Well, I'd like to think that this is the unimpeachable victim, so to speak. I mean, he's 6 years old, he's autistic, he's strapped into the car with his father. There are so many details about this case that are wrong from the start. I really believe it's going to come out that it's a case of a personal vendetta by these cops against this man, mm-hmm. who incidentally was only 25 years old and was shot in the head and does not even know yet that his son is dead because he's in a coma. But, I mean, according to the police, the state police superintendent who had the press conference and gave the statement about the arrest, he said that after viewing the body camera footage, he said, I'm not going to tell you basically all about the footage, but I am going to tell you this. It is the most disturbing thing I've seen. And he can't say any more about it, which, like, you know, it brings me to tears. This story is just so horrible. There is no reason for this to have happened. It sounds like, you know, at first the cops were saying they had a warrant to go and chase this individual down. No warrant has ever been found or produced. All 4 cops that were involved were acting, or 3 of the cops were acting as city marshals, but the city marshal's office might not even have the authority to give, like, traffic tickets, much less pursue people for warrants in this city. So there's, you know, a problem there. Two of the cops are being tried. They're in the middle of a lawsuit for basically, you know, just kind of like bashing on some guy who had attended a July 4th celebration in the town and saying, like, you're not from around here, are you? And stuff like that. I mean, ugh.
I'm glad you bring that point up, Claire, because I never thought about it until you mentioned right now. It's probably going to be a personal vendetta. I never thought about it that angle. Yeah, thank you.
Well, included in the story there towards the end, the guy's girlfriend, who's gunned down, you know, he's still alive, barely hanging on by a thread there, but she interrupted the court, you know, and she's been crying foul the whole time. And in an interview with The Guardian, she basically made the claim that, yeah, there was some kind of personal beef going on between one of these cops and the guy that was gunned down. So there's a very good chance, like Claire mentioned, that the warrant, basically everything we know about the supposed warrant is false. There basically was no warrant as far as we know. And so it makes us wonder, well, why were they singling this guy out? Why were they targeting him? And according to his girlfriend, there was some kind of personal beef going on between this cop and the guy. And so it seems like, you know, from what we can tell, it seems like, you know, the cop was, you know, pulling some retribution stuff. We don't know exactly. According to some reports, there may have been like a scuffle in a bar or something like that, or it may be something even worse. We're really not sure yet.
There's not much information for what exactly happened, and I'm not sure if what exactly happened will ever come out. But at least from the girlfriend's perspective and what she saw, it sounds like these cops just chased this poor guy and his kid down and gunned them down. In cold blood. And I'm guessing they assumed that the man would die from the gunshot wound to the head, but he's not dead yet. And if he does come through the coma, it could be interesting to see what he has to say.
Now, according to the lawyer for the family, reports came out today that the lawyer was saying that the guy literally had his hands up, too. He had his hands up in the air when the cops shot him, you know, and so that just makes the story even worse. So anyway, you know, keep an eye on the anti-media. We're going to continue following this story and make updates on it as more details become available. But this really is just another, you know, kind of piece of evidence that shows that we've got a major issue with the cops here in the U.S. And, you know, as I was pulling up today to the studio, I was hanging out with my brother. He just turned 21. I was getting back here for the radio show, and we had cops right out front, pulling two cops with dogs, pulling a guy over on his bike. You know, and from what I can tell, you know, I'm just driving by, but I, you know, just looked like a guy on his bike. He didn't look like he was doing anything wrong. But they got two cops out there. They got K-9 units. You know, and it's really scary when you drive by and you hear these big old German shepherds barking in the car. It really is an intimidating kind of situation, you know. And this is, you know, really, really indicative of what's going on right now. We published a report earlier today on the anti-media by Kerry Wedler about Supreme Court justice that basically slammed the entire institution of policing, I guess you could say, because she basically said that cops are kind of living out this mentality of shoot first, think later. And this is Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor, and let me pull the quote out here. What she basically said is, by sanctioning a shoot-first-think-later approach to policing, the court renders protection of the Fourth Amendment hollow. And this is in regards to a recent court case where a cop basically, there was a guy on a high-speed pursuit, and instead of letting the spike strip, you know, pop his tires, the cop just literally shot at him as he was driving and killed him. And his family tried to sue. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they ruled against the family, found the cop did nothing wrong, even though it was documented, the chain of events leading up to the shooting, it was documented that the cop was not following orders, he was not following protocol, he did everything wrong, basically, and he just shot the guy in cold blood, literally 1 second before he was going to hit the spike strip. Like, he didn't even wait for the spike strip to, you know, see if they could pop his tires, stop his car. He just shot at him, killed him.
You know, I just thought of something, too. And this is actually another huge Fourth Amendment sort of case that's gone on in recent years. And it shows a direct eroding of the Fourth Amendment, which is actually quite dangerous. The other one was Hine versus North Carolina. And in that case, basically, the Fourth Amendment was nullified for unnecessary search and seizure when somebody was pulled over for something that wasn't even a justifiable reason to be pulled over, and the passenger ended up being arrested for narcotics possession. And they were claiming that by the Fourth Amendment, that was like an illegal search and seizure, and it should have been, but the Supreme Court ruled that it was not. So that part of the Fourth Amendment was already nullified. This is just another chunk. I mean, it's amazing how, like, you know, quietly the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, how quietly all these things slip by when we're kind of not paying attention.
Yeah, they're using the Constitution to undermine the Constitution.
Exactly.
You know, and it's a sad state of affairs in the United States when these kind of rulings come out, you know, that undermine.
Hey, Nick, I have a question for Manny.
Sure, what's up?
Hey, Manny, do you remember the cop that shot and killed the high-speed chase from a helicopter?
Oh, man.
What? What's going to happen with that? Because that sets a precedent for, like, drones to do the dirty work pretty soon.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. Believe me, we're keeping tabs on that, you know, stuff like that, you know. I just, oh, my God. That's something else right there, let me tell you.
I mean, what are they going to do now? If you run from the cops, they're going to snipe you from a copter?
Yeah.
That's what it's point. I mean, it's going to be like foot chases, too, now, you know, you know, if you do anything, if you're, like, just not even pulling over, they're going to order a drone strike or what?
Exactly. That's what we were talking about today. You know, like, for instance, like, say the Border Patrol wants to get into the drones, you know, and this protest, as I was, we're at the immigration building in downtown San Diego. And even somebody says, okay, who's going to be justified to have a drone that's right on the border? Because we don't know if they're on the Northern American side. You notice I didn't say American because I'm always telling people Northern American side or the Latin American side, you know? And that's kind of iffy because who's going to be responsible? Because there's part of the border that doesn't belong to the United States or Mexico. So if the drone's right in the middle, like who's going to be taking responsibility? And it's kind of sad. And one of the things I did make a comment tonight, Nick and Claire, is that now, as an activist, I can't tell if I'm in Mexico with the Mexican cops or here because they're just as bad. I thought it was only Mexico. This place is bad. You know, so.
It's time to make sure your passport papers are in order.
Yeah. It really is, DV. You know?
We're working on that for Claire.
you guys got to do what I do and get a dual Canadian citizenship.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go, DV.
You know, coincidentally, Canada was just ruled the freest country in the world.
Well, where's everyone going to flee to when shit gets rough?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be going to Mexico and Canada. You know, it's interesting that you bring up that helicopter when they shot out of the helicopter at that moving car. Because I think, was it North or South Dakota? I think it was North Dakota that just kind of...
Yeah.
They basically passed a ruling saying that, in theory, they could start weaponizing drones for law enforcement use as well. And this is kind of, you know, all signs point to this becoming a kind of a national phenomenon. And so it's not that far-fetched to think in the next 5 or 10 years that we're going to see pretty much widespread use of armed drones flying around as if regular cops weren't bad enough. You know, you put them behind a computer screen and have them flying drones, there's even less of the human element involved, you know, and it's kind of a scary situation, really scary situation, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we gotta be vigilant about what's going on with this police state, man, because the Supreme Court ruled, and all the judges ruled in the favor against this family today in this case, except for Sonia Sotomayor, and she made that comment, you know, and so it's really, you know, it's really scary to think that there's kind of a consensus by the government at the highest levels that this kind of stuff is okay.
Well, actually, I'm actually reading Rise of the Warrior Cop by, what's his name?
Bradley Balco.
And I was reading right about the formation of SWAT and what was going on at the time. And for a brief period after, like in the late 60s, all police departments in the country had a policy where they were allowed to shoot to kill if they saw somebody committing a felony or suspected somebody was committing a felony. So, you know, it's happened before. And now we have all these like fun technological weapons at their disposal. I mean, you know, it's not far-fetched at all to see what's coming.
RoboCop was just predictive programming. Mechanized police force is definitely going to happen. I actually did an article about that a few months ago. It was maybe 6 months ago, about how RoboCop kind of shows us a glimpse of what a mechanized police force would look like.
Ooh.
Yeah, and you know, that brings up another valid point, because it just gives us kind of a urgency here on the activist side of things with kind of bringing this stuff to justice quickly, because if we don't move soon to put a stop to this police statism and to this global war on, you know, quote unquote war on terror, which is just, you know, global empire or whatever, it's becoming so mechanized that the human element is going to be removed from it, you know, so it's only a matter of time, 20 years from now, maybe at the most, I think, before you see a pretty prevalent RoboCop type of movement going on, where a lot of cops are being replaced by mechanical cops, and of course the excuse is going to be that they're doing it to protect the cops and they're not going to have to put them in harm's way. but again, you know, it's kind of taking the human element out of it, which, you know, we all know humans are flawed as well, but you know, it could be even worse if you put drones involved, you know, drones in charge of stuff.
At least human beings, for the most part, even if they are skewed, have a moral standard and a code of ethics, and a machine doesn't give two shits about shooting a missile right at your face.
Yeah.
So that's really what it is there's no caring that's going to come out of the policing of the future. It's not going to be policing. It's going to be slave control.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, now one of the things I'm mad at the cops too, I'm also an animal activist big time. Now even your dog is not safe from the cops, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and
or kittens.
So many.
Hey, speaking of animal activism, what about that news out of SeaWorld?
Oh, yeah, that's pretty big.
That is big time. You're right.
Claire, you did that article today, right, about the bill that would shut down SeaWorld's exhibit?
Yeah, I did. It's called the Orca Act, and you know, it was introduced by Adam Schiff, and it would end the captivity of breeding, import, export, anything having to do with orcas on display would be prohibited by this bill. So this is really a wonderful measure. One thing that people were saying a lot of, oh, great, you're going to release all these captive whales into the wild and they're going to be, you know, they're going to die right away. Good job, you know, whatever. You know, that's really obfuscating the issue because, you know, they're obviously going to implement a plan where they, the whales who are most suited to be released into the wild will be just fine and they'll do that. And the others, you know, they'll have a program where they'll be able to keep them and provide veterinary
sanctuary,
care or whatever.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
Maybe a bay where they can keep.
It's ridiculous to think they're just going to like open the gates and say, see ya, have fun. Yeah, I mean, that's...
We should let the Navy use them to sink subs. Put torpedoes on them.
They're already doing that with dolphins, man.
Well, imagine a giant killer whale. It's even better.
Yeah. Yep. So we can only beat this police state stuff to death so much. So I want to move on here a little bit. There was a very interesting phenomenon that went on over the weekend on Saturday, and we haven't really posted about it on the anti-media yet, just because we don't know what the hell to post about it, really, because it's just such a weird thing. Claire actually saw it firsthand. I'm not sure if Manny saw it firsthand. I didn't happen to see it because I was up in the forest when it happened, and we weren't able to see it through the trees. But there was what the government is saying was a missile test, a big rocket launched from a submarine. It was a Trident missile, I think it was. Which is a, you know, they're normally speaking, they're a thermonuclear weapon, and it caused a big stir here in Southern California. And in fact, it was visible from like Arizona, Nevada, all the way up into Northern California. I know they saw it also in Reno,
in Utah.
Some places in Utah saw it as well. So Claire, first I want to just get your description of it, and then I want to pass it off over to Jake and DB to see what they think about this thing.
Okay. So I didn't actually firsthand witness the beginning of this. Like, I didn't see the actual beginning of how this happened, but the friends that were over at the time did see what happened, and they filmed it, and I saw their footage of it. And I'm not sure that I buy the idea that they want to test some missile that's so conspicuous that it takes forever to get up into the sky and then explodes all over the place and then leaves a greenish glow for 20 minutes afterwards. I mean, it's believable perhaps to a point, but it gets a little bit strange when you say that there were jets circling around in the afterglow of this thing. And, you know, there's all sorts of other people saw different things, and it didn't look like a missile test to people who had seen missile tests for, you know, all of their life. So
yeah, and today I was trying to find some footage of any testing of these same exact missiles before, because according to Lockheed Martin's press release, there's been 150 successful tests of these things. And so I figure, you know, there must have been, you know, if this thing is so blatant and so obvious and lights up the night sky like it did for, you know, 50 million people to see, I figure, okay, there must be some kind of someone else must have seen this thing before, you know. And so I went and I was looking for some footage, and I couldn't find anything, you know. And so I was just like, well, this is kind of weird, you know. They've tested it 150 times. No one has ever seen this phenomenon before. So I found that slightly, you know, a little bit concerning. Manny, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say officially, so DB and Jake and Claire and Nick can know about it. I believe in UFOs because I definitely saw one in Mexico. The reason I reported the cops because I didn't want the cops to come and say, you know what, you're crazy and we're going to lock you up. But the bottom line is, I always tell people, how naive of us thinking that the government spending all this time and all this money going to space if there's no life in other planets? Come on, dude. You know, DB and Jake, you're in the perfect place to be talking about Roswell, New Mexico. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we should. I'm just gonna knock on the door over there and ask them what they got inside. I actually didn't. It's crazy because I'm borderline obsessed with UFOs and the idea of, I mean, aliens definitely exist in the universe and galaxy, probably in local cluster. You know, the question is whether they've been here. It's either drone technology, government drone, statism, or it's hard for me to believe that, quite frankly, it's just hard for me to believe aliens would have mastered the almost incomprehensibly complex machinery that would be required to travel between stars. And then they would send up a flare into the sky alerting us. I'm having trouble with this whole story, frankly. DB, help me out, man.
Well, I mean, I've read up a lot about basically our missile attack, and I mean, what I think we just saw was our only real response to if China and Russia both decided to attack us when our economy does collapse, and it will. It may take 10 years, but it will. And they're going to try to use that moment of weakness to take us out, double team us. And I think what we saw was a second generation Trident. And what I mean by that is I think we saw ICBM that is now able to hit satellites because it did not land. It actually left the atmosphere.
Yeah.
When we have Tridents coming out of subs that take out the entire satellite network of Russia and China, well, guess what? They can EMP us all they want, but they don't know what they're shooting at. They don't know where to hit us. They become blind. So I think effectively what we just told them was, if you want to come at us when we're weak, go for it. We're still going to be able to knock everything you have out. And that was kind of like saber rattling for the next generation. You know, it's going to get to outer space and it's going to take it to that next level.
Or if you want to go further down the rabbit hole, maybe it was just a psyop to see how people would react to seeing something like that. You know, you never know what they're doing up there. But yeah, it's a true mystery. I'll be interested to see how someone from anti-media covers it.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think DB brings up a pretty good point because it for people all over the Southwest to see it. You know, normally you'd expect, because I've seen rocket tests before, just in the low atmosphere, and you know it's pretty much like you see it over San Diego, maybe in the outlying, you know, and maybe in Orange County and just to the east you might see it. But for it to be visible across states, you know, it kind of tells you that thing was up in the atmosphere. You know, it was way up there.
And it's massive. I mean, you're talking about something that probably was on the scale of like a space shuttle, like that kind of an ICBM. Because for it to be seen and make that kind of immense power.
Right, from that many states to see it like that. That's
depending on what was actually used for, you know, the weapon itself. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever substance was used, that could be, you know, equally as bright or...
Yeah, it's probably cobalt. I mean, I've been reading about how that's the next generation for nuclear powers. They're starting to use the radioactivity of cobalt, which is many thousands, if not even tens of thousands of times uranium and plutonium. So we have that next generation. I mean, that's when we travel the stars, it'll be on cobalt nuclear engines to start with.
So, you know, the other thing that I was thinking about, because after watching the video and hearing some firsthand reports of what people saw, besides just that plume that you see in most of those videos, which kind of looks bluish white, there was these green flashes of light that really were having people or were really had people puzzled. And so the other thing that I was thinking it could have been is this, you know, long-hailed missile defense system that they've been talking about, that you know of, that they've been testing and working on for a really long time, and so there's a chance that maybe it was a test of the missile defense system, you know, and they were using lasers to try to shoot this thing down, possibly just as a test, because these green flashes, it was kind of explained that it was like a refraction of the light from the sun hitting the plume of chemicals from the propellant and stuff, and that really just doesn't seem that plausible. The way that the light reacted, it was just like it really looked like flashes of laser beams. So I think that's another plausible theory, is that it was maybe a testing of the missile defense system. You know, the one thing that is for sure is that it's hard to trust the official government narrative, you know, and that's what something that we all kind of know. I'm pretty sure everyone listening to the show tonight knows that it's really tough to trust the government narrative. They don't lie to us 100% of the time by any means, but, you know, there is a small percentage of the time that they're lying to us, you know, so it's hard to believe anything at face value that comes from the government. So I think it's good to keep an open mind on what this thing was. And look for evidence, look for investigations, because the press release from Lockheed was pretty watered down, and it's just one of those things where, you know, it's one of those things hard to believe. So anyway, that's a really interesting thing. Well, I'm sad I missed it.
It's truly the unidentified flying object at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that's you know, the term UFO really... It's so stigmatized because you immediately think someone's referring to an alien when it's just unidentified. We don't know what the hell it is. And yeah, Nick, you're right. There's have no reason to trust any kind of government narrative at this point. Of course, the Navy is pretty vociferous about saying this was a missile test. But yeah, who knows?
I mean, it probably was a missile test. And Nick, I like your theory too. I mean, this was not a ballistic rocket. This was a literal space shuttle that we saw. I mean, it had to be that big. So I don't know. You had a good theory, Nick. Maybe they did launch some massive thing and try to shoot their own thing down to test their own, you know, their own defense system. That would be kind of interesting.
Or blame it on ISIS, you know?
Yeah, maybe it was ISIS. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
And coming from Mexico City as an activist, I do trust the government 10% of the time.
More than me, buddy.
That's a good
rate. Very optimistic.
Good rate.
Yeah.
More than me.
We got a few other kind of big stories here, and then I just want to open open the show up for dialogue. Maybe take a few callers and see if they have any questions for us here. I had to reject a couple calls just because we have such a big panel tonight. We'll take some calls in about 10 minutes. If anyone wants to join us. The number is 718-717-8296. If you get on the call, make sure you mute your microphone, turn off the radio behind you. You can listen to the conversation while you're on the call. And then we'll come to you based on your area code. So we have another story here out of Hawaii, which is rather interesting and contains somewhat of a history lesson as well, because this is one of the things that we aren't taught about in school, is that the occupation of Hawaii is a rather illegal, and it was rather brutal in the way it was done, and typical American fashion, ethnic cleansing, cultural cleansing, takeover of the education system, purging the local language and all that kind of thing. All that stuff happened back when the U.S. Kind of took over Hawaii in the very late 1800s. But anyway, the natives there are making some headway as far as getting sovereignty from the U.S. And basically they're trying to get their own autonomous area, very similar in fashion to the way Native Americans get their own, you know, self-government, self-rule type of autonomy here on the mainland. But they're working for those same kind of rights over in Hawaii. And they're about to elect some delegates to have their own like constitutional convention, and they're going to be deliberating over this idea of, you know, declaring sovereignty from the U.S. and that kind of thing. So you know, that's something to keep an eye out on. In February, we're expecting to see some kind of decision on this, and you know, this can be rather big news for people out in Hawaii, and at the very least, they. You know, get some recognition for what you know has been done to them by the U.S. government. Basically, they got the same treatment that the Native Americans got, and that, you know, mostly all the indigenous people in the Americas got from the Europeans. So this is a big step for the people in Hawaii, and they've long been, you know, kind of oppressed over there. They have a very bad economic, you know, situation for the Native Hawaiians, and you know, it's just they've been messed up for a long time. Most of it not by their own doing. You know, the United States government kind of went in there and destroyed a lot of stuff that they had going for them before before the occupation. You know, they had a kingdom and they had a queen and, you know, all this stuff. They had their own culture going on, and a lot of that was, you know, wiped out when we took it over. And it was all done illegally, you know. And so there's actually been appeals to the United Nations to, you know, get that occupation, you know, ruled illegal and kick the U.S. government out. We know that's probably not going to happen. The U.N. is pretty much controlled by the United States. It's headquartered in New York, and, you know, we pull the strings there. So, you know, I wouldn't expect much from the U.N., but there is a huge movement in Hawaii, and this is, I think, the main story here. It's not the legal process and all that stuff. There's a big sovereignty movement in Hawaii, and they have a huge, powerful, well-organized activism movement going on over there, and they're making pretty big strides, and this is what this story is about. Anyone wanting to read it further, because like I said, there's a lot of history in this article. It's a really long article. We can't get through the whole thing on air. It's titled Hawaiian Natives Move One Step Closer to Declaring Sovereignty from the U.S. Government. Go check that out on the anti-media, because it is a really interesting story, to say the least.
My sister lives there, and she was telling me that's pretty much going forward. But the big caveat's going to be that, of course, Pearl Harbor stays, because the people understand if they really had a true sovereignty and got rid of Pearl Harbor and the military there, that probably China would just come swoop them up.
Yeah, I mean, in the future, that's definitely a possibility. And, you know, tensions between the U.S. and China, I wouldn't say they're at an all-time high, because we had direct combat with China during the Korean War, but they are at a pretty high level of escalation right now. China has been kind of, their boats have been spotted pretty close to the U.S. off of Alaska. We've been pushing the boundaries with those islands. I forget the name of them. The islands in the South China Sea, where you know, China is like laying claim to them, and
manufactured islands.
Yeah, we put some of our ships within 12 miles of it. I think
it was 13.8. It was 12 nautical miles. We put our ships over there just, you know, for the hell of it, because we like to show off.
Just
because, like,
yeah, it's like we don't have enough problems. We don't have enough conflicts going on.
So let's provoke war with China, because, you know, our war faction is kind of missing in the Asian field right now. So, yeah. So we go and kind of, like, make this show, and then China basically says, do it again, and it's war.
Yeah, so, and they're not taking it lightly.
Not at all.
So it really is a scary time right now on foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't quite understand why yet so much is being made of this Russian jet that was brought down. They're still trying to figure out why or how. U.S. media has taken a big liking to this story, and
yes,
CNN, I guess, is headlining it. CNN finally found a plane, I guess. We all know when that Malaysian plane went missing, they provided about 2 months worth of 24-hour coverage for it. I think they're still looking for that one over there.
They are.
CNN's still looking for that plane, but they finally found this Russian plane. Egypt, and they, you know, and their CNN has been running that story, headlining for a long time. So I'm not sure the narrative that they're trying to build on that, but there is something to it. So we got to keep an eye on that. And, you know, as always, in recent times, you know, the Russian escalation is still continuing with Syria and the U.S. You know, it's if it wasn't apparent that it was a full blown proxy war before. I mean, here on the anti-media, we've been talking about that since, 2014, 2013? Mm-hmm. Now it's, like, completely clear. You know, it's Russia's in there with their, you know, their weapons and equipment and their knowledge and their infrastructure, and they're backing the Syrian government. We're openly arming rebels, Syrian rebels, and, you know, we're going in there under the guise of fighting ISIS when, you know, maybe they are bombing ISIS here and there, but the priority they have, the priority the United States has, is to overthrow the Syrian government, and because if we did that, it would weaken Russia, it would weaken China, it would weaken Iran, it would do a lot of damage. You know, it would rearrange the whole geopolitical landscape in the Middle East, which is kind of the power base for the world, because that's where all the oil has to go through and all that, most of the oil.
And pretty unlikely to happen, too.
Yeah, and you know, Russia's got these pipelines that right now they feed Europe like 40% or more of its gas and natural gas and oil, and Russia has a great interest in keeping that you know, not a monopoly, but keeping that, you know, near monopoly in place. And that's what Syria is all about. You know, they're trying to undermine Russia's monopoly.
You know what's interesting, though, Nick? The whole importance of Russia's natural gas fields just kind of got muted when Israel found out it was sitting on top of something called the Leviathan field, which is the single largest natural gas field in the entire world. And the unfortunate part for the Palestinians is that Gaza's basically got the shoreline where the big mass of that gas is. So a lot of people wonder why this ethnic cleansing and things are going on. Well, again, it goes back again to geopolitics, because these people are basically blocking this huge amount of gas by being there.
Yeah, and also on the Golan Heights, which technically speaking is legally speaking is a Syrian territory, but Israel has been occupying that, I think, since the Seven-Day War back in the 60s, when they captured it from Syria. So it's kind of an illegally occupied territory as well.
Oil field.
And they're sitting, the Golan Heights is sitting on top of a bunch of oil supplies and stuff too. And that's one of the reasons, at least according to some neoconservative plans that have been in place since the mid-90s, at the very least, part of the plan with weakening Syria before all these pipelines were planned and all that stuff was to make sure that Israel was going to be able to hold on to these Golan Heights. And part of the reason why they wanted to destabilize Syria and get kind of a Western puppet government in place over there was to make sure that Israel was permanently going to be able to hold on to those Golan Heights areas to maintain all of those resources and stuff like that. And so, you know, that's all part of this big geopolitical nightmare that's going on over there. And, you know, unfortunately, it's a battle between oligarchies. You know, it's Russia is the main benefactor right now to back the Syrian government. The U.S. Indirectly is the main benefactor to overthrowing the Syrian government. You know, and these are the two main, you know, headwinds that are going on that are causing this, that are fueling this civil war. And, you know, it's understandable that these large countries are trying to protect their corporate interests. Mm-hmm. But the saddest part of it all is that, I mean, there's been over 300,000 people already dead now in Syria because of it. And there's been, now the numbers are up to like 13 million people displaced within Syria, many of which are turning into refugees, and that's becoming a whole nightmare for Europe and all these other countries in the area.
And you know what, Nick? Assad, I don't know if people know that Assad's part of a minority sect of Islam called the Alawite. He literally could never, and none of his supporters, and literally nobody in the country who's Alawite could ever surrender to ISIS or any other movement except this government, because if they do, they'll be wiped out genocidally. So you have like 2.5 million people there that are as hardline as you can imagine, because the only other option is their death and the death of all their families and their whole culture. It's kind of like the Armenians, dude. I mean, and then even the Kurds, where you have this 2 or 3 million people in a tribe and they cannot ever surrender, and they won't. And people have to understand that's a big, big part of the whole problem.
Talking about foreign affairs, one of the reasons this government from the United States, and you notice I don't say American. I'm glad Nick said that, because I don't want you to think Latin America is doing this. The U.S. government is backing Mexico so they can kill our people, number one. And there's another reason that a lot of people don't talk about it, so let's talk about it now, is they know that China had offered Mexico a long time ago a lot of money, say, hey, let us come through your country so we can attack the United States the back
way. And build bases, right?
Yeah, and attack them in the back way, in Mexico, stuff like that, you know. And God only knows right now with foreign affairs what's going to happen. I know Puerto Rico, I've talked to friends in Puerto Rico just last week, and they want to separate from the United States. A lot of chaos going on in the Dominican Republic. But one of the things right now is I'm just waiting to see what type of affairs now the narco gobierno is going to have with Cuba, because they're just making deals left and right with Mexican companies in Cuba, you know. So,
hey, Manny, I heard that the Chinese had something like 500,000 soldiers at like 10 different bases in Mexico right now.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about. Exactly, you know.
But that we know they're there, because if they ever try to cross the border in mass, we'll just bomb the living shit out of them with drones. So they're kind of just sitting there waiting for, like, what? I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
Well, you know, this east-west tension, you know, as it continues to rise, we've got another story here from Claire, and this is another part of the reason why we had such a busy weekend, was because, you know, in the middle of all these tensions and all this beef going on, one of Putin's associates was found dead in a hotel room in Washington, D.C., and, you know, this is one of those stories that is sure to spark a lot of controversy and a lot of theories as to, you know, what was going on. But what we do know is that this guy, Mikhail Lesin, I don't know how to pronounce it, but he's basically the guy that founded RT. And RT is basically Russia's most effective propaganda outlet. And, you know, we all know RT. Abby Martin was awesome on RT, and she claimed to have a lot of editorial independence, but we know RT is kind of a mouthpiece for the Russian government, and, you know, they do cover domestic affairs for the United States in a very anti-establishment perspective, of course. That makes plenty of sense because it's Russian government funded, but it was very interesting that this guy was found dead in Washington, D.C. No one really knows why he was there.
They didn't even know, his family didn't know why he was in D.C. at all, much less the U.S., so.
Yeah, and so, you know, this may, you know, I don't want to speculate too far out there right now, but, you know, this may also be tied in with, you know, it may be tied back to this, you know, world proxy war that's going on right now with the U.S. and Russia, and, you know, we know that the tensions are high and it's escalating, and as I mentioned, the proxy war, you know, we're funneling weapons over there to the Syrian rebels. They're using those weapons to fight against Russian, you know, tanks and artillery and jets and things like that. You know, and so this may very well be a part of it, because the fact of the matter is RT is actually pretty effective. You know, they really are. They have a lot of people watching them around the world, even in the U.S. You can get access to RT on a lot of the satellite TV networks and things like that. So people are watching this stuff on TV. They have a great YouTube presence. And they uncover a lot of stuff. And this is how we found out about Victoria Nuland and the NATO's plotting to overthrow the government of Ukraine, which in many ways has been successful. And so we're starting to find out about, you know, all these things that are going on, and it really is kind of a frightening situation when you look at the depth and I don't know how to say this, but it's just, you know, there's so many different levels to what's going on right now. It's not just a proxy war, it's not just the resources, it's not just Syria. You also got Ukraine, you know, and all this stuff with China.
It's like a mixture of, you know, personal grudges and politics and geopolitical maneuvering and, you know, proxy warring and intimidation. It's like, it's a big mess, and we're running it, and everybody's on to our government.
Yeah, and except for our own people.
Exactly.
And, you know, and the thing that the government has going for them right now, the best thing they got is a Democrat president. In Obama, the anti-war president, the Nobel Peace Prize winning president that has now started more wars than his predecessor, George W. Bush.
Obama's created a pro-war liberal left, dude.
Yes.
He's created the most asinine of all demographics, which is that what that Terry Burke, you know, writer falls into, is these people are, well, if you're not for us, you're against us, idiots. That they have the most misguided patriotism I've ever seen. And I would say the vast majority of these cream puffs have never picked up a gun, let alone fought in a war.
There's a lot of logical leisure domain going on. I mean, you have to make gigantic leaps in reality to believe some of the stories that in the narratives that they try to feed the public. And amazingly, the public still buys it.
Yeah, I mean, even the Bernie Sanders supporters, man, and this is really the really sad part of it all, is that, you know, Bernie Sanders is kind of pitched as the activist left and the progressive left, you know, and these are the guys that are typically like anti-war and stuff. You know, and I personally wrote an article about his track record on foreign policy, which, you know, without watering it down or sugarcoating it, he supports the empire full-heartedly. In fact, we have an article coming out tomorrow from Jake that is kind of touches on that same subject. And anytime we speak out about Bernie Sanders' foreign policy, we get, you know, our own fans kind of destroy us, or not destroy us, but try to argue every argument that's possible in favor of, oh, well, making excuses for Bernie Sanders, even though he's done pretty much just as bad as any candidate out there on foreign policy. I mean, he took a rhetorical vote against the Iraq war. I think it was like 99-1, you know. His vote against the Iraq war was kind of inconsequential, but at the same time, he still voted to fund it afterwards, you know. And so it really is kind of true what Jake was saying and what DB was saying, is that the left has been completely deflated when it comes to foreign policy. The left is now, in fact, I think it's even more pro-war than the Tea Party in many ways, because during the No War with Syria rallies in 2013, there was a big Tea Party presence in our rallies that I noticed for sure. That were against it. Well, probably just because Obama was the one, you know, just because it was Obama leading the war. Like, oh, Obama, you know, we can't have war with Obama. Only with the Republican leading it. They're the only ones that know how to win these wars. But you know, it is a really scary prospect. Even the activist wing of the Democratic Party, the real progressives, even my friends that are independents that are going to vote for Bernie Sanders, they've given him a pass on foreign policy. So there really is no hope for an anti-war left until we have a Republican president in power, which is probably going to, you know, which is probably what's going to be happening in 2016 from all my indications. And, you know, I hate to go back and double down on my prediction, but by all signs, I see Marco Rubio, floating to the top. He's now in third place in the national polls. He's got the backing of Sheldon Adelson, which is the single largest fundraiser for the Republican Party. He picked up another endorsement from another Republican billionaire. So from everything I can tell, you know, it's Marco Rubio floating to the top. You know, Trump never really had a chance to begin with. He literally is too much of an outsider. He's an idiot, and he's just spitting out really hot talking points and rhetoric that, you know, the Tea Party base is like eating up. But he was never given a chance. He's not part of the establishment. We all see what's happening to Ben Carson, which is becoming like a huge.
He's so intelligent. He can look at like a star. He should be president because he can look at the brain. He's the only candidate that can look at the brain, you know, and really understand the brain, and that's why he should be president. You know,
I really feel sorry for his past patients. I mean, I just have to wonder what happened there.
He's like, he cracks open their head, and he's like, I can't tell if this is a grain silo or if this is a cavity that's supposed to hold some kind of organic matter in it.
He's the dark chocolate brother, the dark chocolate Trump is what I call him.
Yeah, and he, in many ways, you know, he's even worse. He's trying to appeal to the evangelical base with all this, you know, weird kind of religious hocus pocus type of rhetoric, and it really is sad. But you know, he's got a little bit of support there. But Trump really is the only guy with any kind of legitimate support. But Trump is never going to be given a chance because he is not part of the establishment.
Trump's campaign's already broke too, by the way. So I don't know how that's going to work out.
Yeah, so, you know, it's Rubio's getting all the big money, man. With Bush falling out, you know, but it's only going to be a little bit longer before Bush drops out of the race. Rubio's going to have all the establishment money, and so he's going to be the candidate. And he's probably going to be president. I hate to say it, but he probably will be. But, you know, the good thing about it is that if Rubio becomes the next president, at least there'll be some opposition from the left for World War III. Right, because right now Obama's like laying the groundwork. Obama's laying the groundwork to start World War III. I mean, everything Obama is doing, proxy war in Syria, NATO proxy war in Ukraine, you know, hiking the tensions up with China. Obama's laying, yeah, you know,
shits and giggles.
Obama's laying the groundwork for World War III. The next president is going to inherit, you know, World War III, basically.
What did Obama just do that people thought was a resounding success for the environment? It actually, what it did was cut off China's cheap oil supply for the future. That was going to come from Canadian tar sand oil, which can burn there because they don't care about their environment. Now, with the Keystone being blocked, the TPP being ratified, you've essentially cut them out of the Pacific economy, cut off their oil supply. It harkens back to when we cut off Japan's oil supply prior to World War II. I mean, we're just goading them and egging them on and trying to get them to first strike us so that we can legitimately use whatever super weapons we have. And that's just – it's really that easy to look at.
Well, the TPP thing is huge, right? It hasn't been ratified yet, okay? They've come to an agreement on it, and now it's got about 40 days left, maybe 45 more days for Congress to look it over.
I think it's 85, but
another
NAFTA. Congress is going to be looking this thing over, and you know, Congress is going to vote for this thing.
Straight up or down?
Yeah, up or down because of the fast track thing. And you know, I from what I can tell, the American public, the people that are aware of it are kind of against it. The sad fact of the matter is most people are kind of just apathetic because they don't give a shit. They don't even know what it is, and they just think the government's going to do what's in their best interest, even though the government only has – I think Congress has – now they're up to like 13% approval rating. They've gone up a little bit.
Yeah, the public should be horrified about this. But
you know. Yeah, so no. Yeah, there's a lot of economic things going on, including with the Keystone – including with the TPP, that is really, you know, economic warfare that's setting the stage for some big conflict coming up. And so with a Republican, in all likelihood, a Republican president is going to be coming into power. Perhaps we may get some newfound support from the left because they'll be against wars if Republicans are doing them. Right now, they're kind of silent because it's okay because Obama's doing it. But, you know, Obama just recently deployed troops to Cameroon, which is a Western Africa country. Mm. He recently redeployed troops to Kuwait. I really don't know why. They're sending troops. They've announced that they're sending ground troops into Syria.
Afghanistan
is ongoing. Afghanistan is now – it's going to be the – it's already the longest war we've ever been in. And we're this is including World War I and World War II. Afghanistan is now the longest war we've ever been in. Obama just announced it's going to continue at least into 2017. When a Republican sweeps into power, they're going to keep that going. And, you know, the things that are ongoing in these countries, like with Doctors Without Borders hospital, they're just egregious. I mean, Claire just covered a story late last week regarding some newfound information. We all heard about the Doctors Without Borders hospital that was bombed by a AC-130 gunship, and this is being considered a war crime by many people, and the MSF, the Doctors Without Borders, is calling on war crime investigations. According to what they were saying, not only did they bomb the hospital,
but they targeted directly the one specific building. The one where the GPS coordinates just happened to have been taken.
They started shooting.
Yeah, and according to the story that Claire wrote, they bombed the place, and then as the people were running from the burning building, they were shooting at the people running from the building.
Right, exactly. Like they, from all the reports gathered, from the eyewitness testimony, from everything else, they reported hearing an AC-130 prop plane flying around, circling the bombing as the bombing was going on, and then basically shooting people who were essentially victims and in shock, shooting them to death from this plane as they ran. I mean, the report is so blatant and so frightening, it literally brought tears to my eyes. It's one of the worst things I've read in a long time.
Oh, yeah. So if Rubio is going to win, who's going to be his vice president? Ted Cruz, Nick?
Nick, speaking of Rubio, do you remember our bet? We made a bet about the presidency. Do you remember it?
I don't know. I think, yeah.
Vote for nobody.
I think we
You bet Bushio or Rubio, and I bet Clinton, and I even gave you odds, man. So don't forget about that bet.
You bet a bottle of whiskey, right?
It's odds. If Rubio wins, I owe you 100. If Clinton wins, you owe me 20. Do you remember that?
that sounds like
These Nuts runs, he's going to have Lisa Ann as the VP.
These Nuts was such a threat to the establishment, they had to drop him from the polls. I mean, he probably would have been the front runner at this point. But they stopped polling him because he was so dangerous. I'm not even joking. Like, it's funny, but it's actually serious.
I'm laughing because it's so terrible.
He polled at 10% with no media coverage and no budget. You know what I mean? So it's kind of funny. But yeah, they're having to pull that guy out of the debate or out of the polling because he's so dangerous. But I think we're coming up to the end of the show here. Thank you all for tuning in. We're going to talk about the TPP here in the coming shows, coming weeks, because this is huge. Thank you all. Peace out.
Yo, here we go through the stereo.